one and all, and everyone else who identifies as a one or not at all, to the podcast featuring one Sarah Aird and her lonely friend Josh Withers. This is the Celebrant Talk Show. Welcome to another episode.
Her lowly friend Josh Withers.
Don't make out like you're not
I'm
a big
not
deal.
Really sure how to respond to that. I mean, I presume that the inference there is that as you are lowly, that must mean that I am highly.
Or
am I just medium and you're really low?
All I could long for is just a crumb off your table, Sarah. Just a single crumb.
Hello, everybody. It's very nice to talk to you again. It's exciting times at the start of the year.
It is. This is a really exciting year for me. I'm right now a little bit sweaty and dirty because I've been working around the house because we're hopefully a week or two or three away from renting our house out. Side note, if you're looking to rent a house on the Gold Coast, I know a guy. we're renting out our house so that we can be homeless and travel the globe for a little while.
So I just want to talk about this a little bit because I am fascinated by this. I'm fascinated for a few reasons. The first reason is you literally just bought this house, what, like a year ago?
Yeah, maybe like 13 months. 14 months maybe, yeah.
That's number one. Number two, you've done all this work renovating it and it's beautiful now. And like with the pool and the out the front and the beautiful big like open kitchen through to living space and it's gorgeous. And like you literally just finished that and now you're leaving.
Yeah, well,
now you don't get to enjoy the fruits of your work.
No, we do. It means that we don't have to pay our mortgage for a year. So that's fruits, fruits of a different nature. If you're used to just munging out a mango, just for a year, we're going to have banana. It's that kind of deal. So, yeah.
Okay. Are you going to be able to rent it for enough to pay your mortgage?
Oh, yeah.
Because that's always the problem with renting.
Oh, yeah. We've currently got it listed. I feel like this is a weird boast point, but we've currently got it listed at like double or whatever mortgage repayment is. So. Yeah.
Anyway, oh, that's awesome.
We'll literally be making money.
Yeah, see, maybe I'm just thinking about, I must just be thinking about Melbourne because, like, my people that I know who have investment properties, like, the rent never covers the mortgage, so there's still a little bit of, isn't that what negative gearing is all about?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
I don't really understand money shit and tax. It hurts my head. So, okay, well, all right. So you're going to make all the money, basically, is what this is about, making all the money and being gypsies while Luna is still young enough to be able to do that.
Yeah, yeah. And we've got bookings that are kind of have been appropriated to that travel. Like, we're not just traveling randomly. We're going where people have booked us. And, so it's actually really cool. Like, we're, even just through the month of March, we've got a week in Melbourne, a week in Tassie, a week in Sydney, then April, back to Sydney, then Bali for 2 weeks, and then New Zealand for a week, and then Canberra for a day or two, and then... And then we go to Rome, a little place north of here that you might have heard of. And we're literally just doing three or 4 months through Europe. And I'm just going through the calendar. It's really exciting looking through the calendar because going to Scotland.
And how many suitcases will you be living out of?
So we are literally whittling our whole life down to 220-kilo suitcases and a 7-kilo carry-on each because even though with Qantas, I'm allowed to take all the luggage because I'm platinum and so you get, you know, lots of luggage.
Yeah, but not like on the little airlines through Europe and stuff.
Yeah, so all these crappy little airlines, you know, that we're going to be flying, they've all got 20-kilo limits and so we're just going to whittle our life down to that.
Wow.
Which is partially why we're recording.
Anybody who's listening to this who happens to be Facebook friends with Josh – we'll know what he means when he says he's whittling down his life. He has been selling all of the things.
Yeah.
All the things that you were like super proud of that you owned. Like, look at this really cool Mac from like, you know, the 300 BC that I own and it's amazing and selling all the things. But what, like, I really like all my things.
I'm a big fan of my things
as well. And I like being
well.
Around my things. I like being surrounded by my things, and I like being able to see them, and I like having that I come home and I sit on the same couch every day. Like, how are you feeling about like not having your things?
Yeah, I'm actually feeling fairly okay about it. Today I'm feeling okay about it because there's a sense of peace that's slowly coming as I have less and less things, that I've got less things to look after, less things to care for, less things to clean, you know, less things to worry about. It's also about being really ingenious. Like you and I are recording today's podcast differently to how we would normally record. And I hope and pray that as everyone receives this podcast, that it is at the same high quality that we always aim for, because we're just doing it differently because I'm trialing my travel podcast kit at home, hoping that it's just all okay. And in fact, it's even kind of weird. Like, I'm looking at the screen and like I can't see in the audio form, but maybe that's your name. I don't know. Yeah. Okay, so that's your name. So when you laugh, there's an audio form there. It's like, okay, cool. Maybe it's working. So yeah, we're just trying to get rid of all the things that we don't deem completely necessary in our life so that we can travel uninhibited but still live the life we want to live.
So fascinating. I'd be super interested, once people hear this episode, if like anyone wants to talk to us about how they do this or if they do this. Like, I know there's a celebrant here in Melbourne who I know who was a professional house sitter, and she's been house sitting for like 8 years.
Wow.
And so I know, right? So she goes from house to house, sometimes 2 weeks, sometimes 6 weeks. She's got clients who book her every year to like look after their house and their pets when they go away. So, you know, she's kind of a bit of a gypsy as well. And the whole thing fascinates me. So yeah, tell us about your experience being a gypsy. Let's hear all about it. I know it's not relevant to celebrancy, but I'm fascinated.
I've been wondering as to how much I document the whole thing, because I don't want to make out like everyone gives a crap about us and our traveling lifestyle, but I think we're doing interesting things and maybe someone might care. So yeah, like I might do some kind of blog or podcast or something about it as well, maybe.
I feel like even if nobody cares right now, like Luna will care in like 20 years.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, like somebody will care at some point. It's interesting. And even if she doesn't care that you did it, she's going to care that she did it.
Yeah. Because she's going to be that kid who's like, she's in grade 10 or something like that. And she's like, oh, yes, I've done Italy in the summer, darling. It's lovely. You should go there. I'm like, well, when were you there? Like, 2020, when I was 1.5. It was great.
I don't remember a thing, exactly. But I'm going to eat out on it for the rest of my life anyway. Okay, good. That now. Given you're about to go traveling the world, I know that we have some podcast listeners in countries that are not Australia, which also fascinates me and fills me with joy and wonder, because I can't imagine what is possibly interesting about the Australian marriage stuff. But shout out to our listeners in like Ibiza and Canada and wherever else we have people, and, you know, hit Josh up. You never know if he's going to end up in your country.
Yeah.
You might like take him out.
I'm getting around. Yeah. Because we're doing Spain and Portugal. We were going to do Canada, but we just cancelled it actually because a good friend of mine's getting married in New York. So we're going to go to New York for his wedding.
Shut up.
And it'll actually be the first time.
You might jump out of here next time.
It'll be the first time that I've ever actually attended a wedding as a celebrant. So not the first time. The first time since maybe 2010 that I've attended a wedding as a celebrant and I'm not the celebrant.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's going to be weird.
It's super weird. And it'll be in New York and it'll be kind of cool.
I want to go to New York. So, yeah, shout out to our international listeners. Thank you so much for listening and for telling us that you love it and for bearing with the talk about Australian marriage legislation that can't be of any interest at all. And, yeah, hit Josh up. You never know. So, yay. And we've now managed to talk for 10 minutes about absolutely nothing. So maybe we should talk about something.
Something. Oh, wow. There are so many things we could choose to talk about, Sarah. But I feel that today it's probably worth talking about the most pertinent piece of news, purely because I'm absolutely sick of, I get a message every day or three from someone either asking one or two questions. When are you guys doing OPD? / like or just a question about studying the cert for, and like where should I study? And for the past, what does it mean, like 2 months or something like that, I've been
about 6 months.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, 2 months. Yeah, right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah, 2 months.
For the last 2 months, I've just been really tight-lipped because you said I had to be tight-lipped.
Pretty much.
About the whole situation. And I've been quite vague. If anyone, like, if you're listening to this and like, oh, yeah, Withers was totally vague about OPD. This is why I've been vague about OPD. Sarah, would you like to tell everyone what's happening?
So I have purchased a registered training organization called Life Skills Training. Some of you who already listen will be familiar with Life Skills Training. Sally Cant is the previous owner, and the one before that was Yvonne Werner, who worked closely with Dally Messenger. This is super exciting. It kind of all just happened in the last couple of months. Sally, unfortunately, has had to move away from this side of her work because she's been very unwell. So she approached me in early January, and it's all happened pretty quickly. I'm both thrilled and terrified, as I'm sure you can imagine. I've really put my big girl panties on here. I'm the CEO. I would like everybody to know that I'm a real adult now. But the super exciting thing is that Life Skills Training is one of the four RTOs that holds a contract to deliver ongoing professional development to Australian Commonwealth Registered Marriage Celebrants. So that means I stole a whole bunch of sessions from other trainers that had already organized their schedule who work for Life Skills. So I'm doing like 25 sessions around the country this year. I'm hitting every capital city at least once, and some more than once. So if you would like to come to one of my OPD sessions, please get in touch with me and I'll be able to send you my appropriate schedule for the closest place to you. And of course, the other exciting thing that they do, that Life Skills Training does, is run the certificate for in celibacy. So I'm transitioning from the previous arrangement that I had with Talented Training. And it's nothing about them. It's simply that an opportunity came up that I couldn't kind of resist. So for 2020, we will be running the cert for under the Life Skills Training banner, and we hope to be able to bring it back under the Celebrant Institute banner from 2021, but we've got to think about how that works because that requires like legal agreements and stuff. So we'll figure out how that works, but for the time being, I am running the cert for through Life Skills Training. Josh is, as always, providing support through the Celebrant Institute in terms of answering questions and publishing blog posts and doing this podcast. So there's always going to be these resources available for all of our students. And yeah, basically it's super exciting and yay, here we go.
I'm really proud of you. You've done something so good here.
Thanks, mate. I'm pretty proud of me too. As I said, also terrified, but that's okay. If we're not terrified at some points in our life, we're probably not doing life properly, right?
This is very true. If you're not living in a place where you're absolutely shitting yourself, apparently you can't achieve anything at that stage. But this is what life is for, you know, just for trying new things and going beyond what you thought you could ever do. Like this is what it's for. I'm excited for you. This is really cool.
It is cool. And it's quite funny because I've been really, in the last couple of years, I've been really kind of anti running an RTO. Oh, I don't want to do that. It's too much work. I can't be bothered.
We've literally talked about it for years.
We have talked about it on multiple occasions, like what would we have to do to start our own, blah, blah, blah. And I've just looked at it so many times and gone, ugh, too hard. But when an opportunity like this falls in your lap where Sally's done such an incredible job at setting everything up to be incredibly compliant and really well organized in terms of the website and the learning management system and all of that sort of thing, it was too good an opportunity and I couldn't really say no. So it's great. And watch this space for, you know, what we'll do next.
So I bought you a present.
did you?
Yeah, I saw the opportunity to gift you with the perfect nerdy Josh gift that you could ever want in this situation. You, my friend, are now the owner of the email address sarah@aird.ceo.
Shut up! That's awesome!
If you email sarah@aird.ceo, it goes straight to you.
That is the most nerdy thing and also awesome.
Yeah, I think I appreciate it.
Oh, my God, I love it. That's awesome. So I expect now all of you people who are listening to send emails to sarah@aird.ceo. That's so cool. Thanks.
So
hilarious.
What's the, like having taken on RTO stuff now, like what's the, like what's something that's kind of behind the curtain where you're like, you know, like this is like a weird new secret or I don't know, like, give us some behind the scenes kind of RTO goss.
I don't have any yet.
Is it all just really boring?
I'm still my, probably. I mean, it's not boring for me because I'm a nerd and I love this stuff. But at the moment, I'm really focused on just getting the OPD schedule all over. We've been advertising OPD for a few weeks now and the bookings are pouring in, which is great. So it's all about that. It's about getting the workbooks you know, formatted and ready to go to print when the first topic is, the first session starts. My first session is on the 9th of March, so it's pretty soon. So it's just all about getting all those things, those really nitty-gritty formatting, admin-y things up and running. I've got no fun secrets for you, but give me time and I'll get there. I know, right? Sorry. But give me time and I'll find some. I have no doubt that I'll find them.
You'd be happy that I really did use a lot of my brain trying to think of a respectful, honourable Sally Can joke, and like, but like, none. Just got nothing. Because Sally, I trust Sally's listening to this. Much love to you. I didn't intend to make fun of you, but I thought, surely if there's a change of this, then she can go from Sally Can't to Sally Can. Like maybe Sally Can rest. You know, maybe that's it. That's a free one.
So. You can stop talking now.
Oh right, okay.
Just from us. Yeah. No, awesome. So, super exciting. Watch this space. It's going to take me a little while to kind of get up to speed with the new systems and all that kind of stuff, but that's no problem. Things, you know, things will happen and it's going to be great. And I hope to roll out the Cert 4 kind of around the rest of the country next year. At this point, I'm still only taking face-to-face bookings in Melbourne and obviously distance bookings are doable anywhere. But, yeah, hope to roll it out distance around the country next year. That'd be really cool. Hopefully we can sort something out to bring it back under the Celebrant Institute banner because that would be cool too.
Awesome work.
Yeah.
So, in so short, everyone go through life skills for your OPD. Does everyone just inundate
Life skills
Sarah?
Training. Okay. I will be there everywhere. Okay, so the next thing that I really want to talk about in today's episode is a really great question we got from one of our Celebrant Institute members, which is about hiring a virtual assistant and the privacy implications of this. So some of you might not know what a virtual assistant is. Virtual assistants have been around for about 20-ish, a little bit over 20 years. And basically a virtual assistant is a personal assistant who you work with over the phone and email rather than having them in your office. And a lot of small business people and medium business people are finding that it's much cheaper to use a virtual assistant who they can just pay for, say, 5 hours a week, et cetera, on a contract basis rather than actually hiring someone to come and sit in their office part-time or, you know, full-time or anything like that. So I've worked as a virtual assistant myself. Before I was a celebrant, I worked in a lot of senior administration roles. So I've done some VA stuff over my time in sort of transcription and and meeting minute taking and various other things. But there are lots and lots of virtual assistants, both in Australia and overseas. And I know that some celebrants are starting to look into this as a way of freeing up some of the time that they spend on admin so that they can spend more time with their families or sitting in the sun or whatever it is that they want to do that's not working. So the question was about the privacy implications of hiring a VA. So as an example, in Victoria, as you know, we have an online marriage registration system through Birth, Deaths and Marriages. And this celebrant wanted to be able to give her couple's details to the virtual assistant and have that person enter them into the BDM system and then print out the paperwork and all that sort of stuff, simply so that the celebrant didn't have to spend the time doing the data entry because she thought she had better things to do with her time, which is totally fair for her to think that. So she wanted to know about my thoughts about the privacy implications. So I know also before I launch into that, that Josh uses a virtual assistant. So I'm sure he's going to have some thoughts about this as well. And I'm sure that other people who are listening are also going to have some thoughts. Here are my initial thoughts. If I personally was to use a virtual assistant for my celebrant work, I personally would want to keep them away from the legality stuff. That's my personal thing. But then I can say that because I'm a really quick typist and it takes me 6 minutes to enter a marriage into the Birth, Deaths and Marriages system. And I know it takes other people a lot longer than that. So if you were going to give a virtual assistant access to your client's details so that they could do the data entry into BDM, I would want to see that you had a contract with the virtual assistant that talked about the fact that they would only use that information for the purposes with which you had, well, the purposes that you had granted them, which is entering it into BDM. And I would also want to know that you had told your clients that you have an assistant who may access the information, that their private information from time to time for the purposes of data entry, filing, whatever else it is. So I would want you to, as the celebrant, to have that in place with both the virtual assistant and the clients. That's my first thing. That's in terms of the data entry of the legal stuff. My second thing is I would want to know that the celebrant was double checking all of the work before they were using it. So I would want you to say, if your virtual assistant or your VA was doing the data entry into Rio, I'd want to know that the celebrant was the one who was checking that information against the birth certificate, passport, divorce details, whatever, double checking it against the information that the couple had provided and doing those checks before the wedding goes ahead. Obviously, as the authorized celebrant, we are the ones with the responsibility to make sure that the wedding is legal and it's all good. It would not be an excuse if something was incorrect and we said, oh, my virtual assistant did that. Uh-uh. That would not fly at all. Not one little bit. The third thing is that I think that I would be inclined to look at, before I went down the virtual assistant route, I would be inclined to look at what other software options there might be for doing the same thing. As an example, a good friend of the Celebrant Institute, Anthony Kribis, is currently working on a software product called Celebrant Easy. And basically, Celebrant Easy has a link that you send to the couple, which collects all of the information that you need to complete a NOIM. The couple fills that in, it comes back to you, you download a Chrome extension and you click a button and all of the information that the couple enters goes directly into the BDM online system. It works in Victoria and New South Wales at the moment, Queensland's on its way. So that obviously requires very little work from the celebrant and would be pretty much this, you know, you're going to get the same result as using a VA, but without including a third party who then has access to private information. Another thing that the person the member who asked the question was wanting to do is that she emails her clients and says and gets them to say, we're going to want a ring ceremony, we're going to want a reading, bloody blah. And then she puts all of that into a document so that when she meets with them face to face, she's already got an outline of what they want to include in their ceremony, and she just has to fill in that outline as she's meeting with them. Now, there are software, there's software stuff that can do that. Like, I know that Google Docs has really great questionnaire type arrangements. I'm not good at that stuff, but I know a few celebrants who are really amazing at using questionnaires and then dropping the answers from the questionnaires into, for example, a ceremony script template. So I would be inclined to look at what other options there were before involving a third party. But that's also because I'm a bit of a control freak and I don't like other people playing with my toys, basically.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were about to stop and say, I just don't like other people. Full stop.
Well, you know, sometimes. So sometimes. They're kind of my thoughts about a virtual assistant and about privacy implications and other thoughts. It's also worth noting, I know that some celebrants use overseas virtual assistants because they're much, much cheaper than Australian virtual assistants. That's fine too. Just make sure that you look into, you know, what are the implications. If you're getting them to enter clients' details into the system, what are the implications of that kind of data traveling between countries and jurisdictions? The other thing to think about as well is that if you are going to have a virtual assistant entering information into BDM Rio or BDM in Lifelink in New South Wales, you're going to have to give them your login. And how do you feel about that? Because as soon as you give them your login, they have access to all the other people's information that's in there as well. Obviously, the person that I spoke to about this wasn't ever going to have her VA submit the marriage, so she was still going to have to deal with that. However, it's just worth remembering that, you know, the minute you start giving your login to other people, it just opens you up to other potential difficulties. So that's my thoughts about virtual assistants. Josh, what about your thoughts?
So we've talked about privacy. I don't know if we've talked about it on the podcast before, but I know I've done a few blog posts about it. And my philosophy of looking at this sphere of being in business, so privacy implications, whether that's on your websites, email, on your personal computers, on your virtual assistants or personal assistants, it's just it's about identifying potential risks and I suppose measuring your privacy debt, like how much privacy debt are you getting into? Because you don't want to be caught with the proverbial pants around your ankles, that kind of deal. So that's my angle of attacking this is what potential problems could arise, and if those arose, what level of shit could I or someone else be in? Because trying to create a zero shit game doesn't exist. There's always a risk. Like Sarah, I know you do have an assistant, but she doesn't do any of your legal stuff. But she does come into your office occasionally. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So I've had a friend of mine, a good friend of mine, has a daughter who is in first year uni, and over the summer holidays when she was at home in Melbourne, she came in, she did some filing for me. She did things like downloading some reports from QuickBooks, but she didn't have – I didn't leave her with access to anything. And
she was in your office and she was on your
correct.
Computer.
That's right. Yeah.
So that's for example, if you work at an Apple store in different parts of the world, you are expected to have bag checks while you're in the store, and there's different issues about accessing, you know, like phone calls, emails, texts, that kind of thing, while you're employed. And so Apple's way of minimizing their possible privacy risks and privacy kind of debt is that they make you come into a physical place where they have, you know, access to the controls, kind of like, you know, an assistant coming into your office, and you don't use your own computer, you use ours, and all these kind of things. This is all just about managing potential risk or managing risk. So the way that I approach that is that my because I guess she is a virtual assistant, but she's a real person, and so
They're all real people.
Yeah. But I suppose my assistant lives on the Sunshine Coast, and she's someone that I've married, and I've we have each other's phone numbers, and you know I know her husband, and so that was the level of risk I was prepared to go into. I wasn't prepared to get a VA from the Philippines, which is very common. And for many businesses, that's a really good idea for them to have a VA from a country where maybe the living conditions are a little bit cheaper and the cost of living is cheaper. And so they don't have to charge as much. So you can get a VA for your $5 or $10 an hour. And there's real good work those people can do. So this isn't even about them coming from the Philippines or anything like that. There's real work those people can do. They could do it in my business. You know, potentially, they could. But I decided to have the level of risk where I would have someone that I knew. She uses her computer and she works from her home. But that means that I get access to the kind of assistant that I might not have had. If I wanted to, say, employ someone locally, and have them come into, say, my office. Well, no one's coming into my office because it's a hellhole. So I'd have to get an office, you know, I have to buy computers and et cetera. So I'm happy with that level of risk, but it's also someone I know. So if she, you know, there's so many issues of privacy that she could potentially get into danger with, and I've assessed her character and I've decided she's a person that I'll trust. So I've looked at all the potential issues and I've tried to minimize the potential issues that could arise, but then also like you communicated about them preparing legal paperwork, because I do get her to input the NOIM info into the different BDM systems. Mm-hmm. But and she sends a PDF to the couple saying please check this, and so that covers like 49% of it. But then I also look at that. Yeah, because there's common stuff that people just miss, you know, like there's common stuff that couples miss. And so she sends them the PDF, but once it gets to that stage, I continue the journey myself. So I prepare the marriage certificates, complete the marriage registration. Generally, I'll sign the NOIM with them. Sometimes people are away, and so they'll get it signed themselves. But then when it comes back to me, I, at that point, look over it. Even though I've already looked over it when it got sent, I'll like double check, look over it when it is sitting in my hands. So, you know, that's the level of risk that I've decided to get into. But I want to have someone that I knew, someone that I had some kind of relationship with, because she's made a few mistakes, because I employed a human. And when those things came up, I was in a place where I could say friendly, in a friendly way, I could say there was an issue. And she was okay with me saying that. And there wasn't this cultural barrier where if I brought up an issue that she might feel weird, or I don't know. I like my position, and I don't think I'd get too much more virtual than that. I like the level I'm at.
Absolutely. And I know one celebrant who has a Filipino VA, and she's very happy with their work. I know another celebrant, the celebrant who asked this question, the person that she's looking to have a VA relationship with is like one of the mums at her preschool or something like that. I don't know. But it's, again, someone she knows. So, yeah, there are different levels of risk and there are different levels of access you can give people to your information, you know, so you want to think about that. But, yeah, just things to think about. And I guess I'm going to come back to my golden rule that I published about on the Celebrant Institute website recently, which is that in anything to do with marriage celebrancy, the golden rule for me, and this is what I teach, is that if you had to go to court to give evidence about the validity of a marriage, could you back every decision that you have made? Could you quite happily stand up on the witness stand and say, I made this decision because of X, Y, and Z, And I stand by that position and I would make that decision again. And so for me, hiring a VA comes under that same thing. If you are getting them to do anything to do with marriage legalities, can you say, this is how I mitigated risk in this situation? This is how I made sure that I was undertaking everything I needed to for my legal obligations, and I'm quite happy with that.
And I really appreciate that that you have that angle of attack, because, like, first of all, I don't want the Attorney General's office to have to issue a fact sheet on personal assistance. Like, I think that's a waste of their resources. And if they were issuing fact sheets or adding to the guidelines on all of these issues, all of their fees would just go through the roof, because it's a lot of work. They probably have to hire a full-time person to produce a monthly bloody fact sheet. So I appreciate that they don't have to, and it reinforces that we're all big kids and we get to make big kid decisions.
Totally.
Which is so important for us just to kind of get into our soul.
And you know, we are given quite a lot of responsibility when we gain our registration as Commonwealth Registered Marriage Celebrants, because the work that we do has a massive impact on couples' lives. And I think that some celebrants get a bit lost in the ceremony creation and the beautiful day and all of that sort of thing, all of which is super important. But we have to remember that we are changing the legal status of everybody that we marry, and the legal process that they go through under our guidance and with our registration changes their access to wills and their tax implications and visas and so many other things. So what we do is actually really, really important. And we are given that, we are privileged to be given that level of responsibility by the Attorney General's Department when they register us as a celebrant. We need to respect that. And we also need to keep it in mind, really, when we do anything to do with marriage. And I'm going to go back to what I said in the last episode about not overstepping, not doing more than we're required to do, but still respecting that what we do is very important and it does have a major impact on people's lives.
Yeah, that's a really important thing to recognize, that we're doing good work here.
Totally. Good, important, awesome work. Yay us.
Talking about doing that, I thought we'd round out the episode with an issue that is far ranging and kind of related to how we started, because we're going to talk about travel, particularly charging for travel. It's something we covered on the Celebrant Institute website a week or two ago, and I thought it might be a nice conversation fodder for you and I to round out today's podcast episode on, because there's so many different philosophies that weigh into this conversation, and also it's wide ranging from as far as, well, what do you charge for a wedding 20 minutes for your house as opposed to 1 hour away from your house versus I'm doing, I've literally today, I received a booking for the Great Ocean Road in December and for Europe next May. And so they have two very different conversations about travel and charging for travel and how to charge for travel and all those kind of things. So I thought it might be a nice place for you and I to kind of talk about what we do and why we do it and what our reasoning is, because I think it's an interesting topic. We'll start out between Linda's question. So Linda asks, as a regional celebrant, I'm struggling with travel and how to incorporate this into my fees. I have a anything over 200 kilometer round trip clause, which may seem a lot, but it's realistic to where I live. My problem is more about inquiry meetings, extra meetings, rehearsals. Obviously, I can't charge for an inquiry meeting, but do I just have a set higher fee for a wedding, which covers longer distances overall when the wedding is near or far? Hope you can help. I've got different thoughts on this, Sarah, but I'll handball to you for a second. What's your travel-esque policy for sales or inquiry meetings / rehearsals / doing the wedding? Like, what's your parameters?
So first of all, we should note that I do 90% of my wedding ceremonies within a 1 hour radius of my home. and funerals are the same. I might get a handful of bookings a year that take me to regional Victoria. I am yet to do a wedding in another state in Australia. I'm quite happy with that. I like being at home. I think I've talked before about how I like to go back to my couch and eat pizza after a wedding. My couch, not somebody else's, not an Airbnb's or a weird caravan park. So I think that because of that, my approach to travel fees is quite different from Josh's. So for the first thing is for meet and greets, for inquiry meetings, they all come to me. In my first year, I traveled to couples' homes and that was okay because, you know, in your first year, kind of do whatever you need to do to get the work. But I had a couple of times where I traveled an hour to get to a couple's home and they weren't there. And that sucked. So late in my first year, probably in November or December of my first year, I decided to hold all meetings at an Italian restaurant, which is about a 5-minute drive from my house when there's no traffic. Sugo. Those of you who follow me on the socials will know that I'm at Sugo a lot. I hold all my meetings there with wedding couples and I hold legals only weddings there probably 85-90% of the time. So because everyone comes to me, that means that I'm not obviously traveling long distances for inquiry meetings. If a couple is in regional Victoria or interstate or overseas at the time that they are inquiring with me, I will offer them a Skype or FaceTime or whatever kind of video conferencing session we can do. Instead of, obviously, I'm not going to expect them to come to Sugo. So we have a FaceTime or Skype or whatever. I personally don't love Skype meetings because I feel I don't perform as well on a screen. As perform sounds really odd, but it is a thing. I just feel, I know that I don't book as many of the couples that I meet with over a video conferencing kind of session as I do the couples that I meet face-to-face. So my preference is that if we are in the same city, we are meeting face-to-face. So that's my inquiry meeting process, and it's the same for my kind of Noem ceremony planning meeting. So then we come to rehearsals and weddings. My policy that is published is that 40 kilometers from my house does not attract any fees. In reality, I will generally go 60 or 70 Ks without charging fees. I'm not about, for example, so the Riverstone Estate is like 62 Ks from my house, which takes an hour. Not about to charge like $14 to go there. I feel like that's petty. But the reason I chose 40 Ks was that if I am traveling far further afield, so to regional Victoria, to Geelong, wherever it is, I can use that. I will give them that 40 Ks for free. And then the way I work out my travel, I don't really tell them. So my website just says travel within 40 Ks is included outside this by negotiation. So basically my system is not very scientific. I look at how many kilometers a return trip to the place is. I take off 80 Ks for my included Ks. I multiply the result by 75 cents because that's kind of around-ish the tax office rate. And then I look at the number and I go, does that feel too big? Does it feel too small? How do I feel about that? I generally like to round it off to an even number, tend to add a bit for GST, and then I go, this is the number. So when I'm quoting a wedding that's far away, I will often give them just one number, which includes the price of the wedding, my normal wedding fee, and the price of the travel. If it is more than 2.5-3 hours from my house, I'm also charging them a night's accommodation because I don't want to, I go on my own. I don't have a roadie or anyone to come with me, and I don't really want to drive 5-6 hours or more in a single day on my own. It's too much. So, and when I add accommodation, I just tell them that I'm going to charge them. Well, I don't even tell them. I just say it includes accommodation, but in my head, I'm including $150 because in regional Victoria, I can get a hotel room for $150 or less. I feel that if I want to go to a fancier hotel in whichever city I'm going to, that shouldn't be the couple's expense. That should be mine. So I'm happy with 150 and then I can pay more if I want to. So I give them a single number. It includes the cost of the wedding, my travel fee that I've figured out with my non-scientific process, and my $150 accommodation if it's further than 2.5 hours away. And I say, this is the number. If they want a rehearsal, I say, great. I can do the rehearsal the day before because that's when I'm going to stay over. So I will come to wherever your venue is the day before. We'll have a rehearsal. I will stay the night. I often then, because, you know, you have to check out at 10 o'clock and the wedding's not till 4 o'clock, I go to the movies or something. So that's fine. And then I go do the wedding and I drive home. If it's in a place that is not far enough away for me to charge accommodation, if I'm charging travel to go to the wedding, I'm also charging travel to go to the rehearsal. If I'm not charging travel to go to the wedding, I don't charge travel to go to the rehearsal. I hope that makes sense. So it does often end up cheaper for me to stay the night and then, so they pay an accommodation fee and then one travel fee rather than paying for me to go there twice. Oh, that was a really long explanation, but I hope that it makes sense. As I say, it's not particularly scientific, but it's what is working for me at this stage. I am always amused when people come back and go, that's too expensive. And I'm like, fine, just find a local celebrant. Like, that you can do that. It's not a problem. And actually, I prefer you to find a local celebrant because I don't like traveling because I'm weird like that. So yeah, that's my approach. And Josh, I know yours is super different.
Well, like, yes and no. So like, obviously the logistics are different, but what I covered in the blog post and I'll cover here today is that there's two reasons for traveling, for charging for travel, which is, I think it's important to talk about why we charge for travel before we actually do charge for travel. And because you always need to know your why, otherwise you're just making crap up and hoping that it floats. So there's, in my opinion, there's two reasons that you would charge for travel. One, because it literally costs you money. You know, like your regular product, so, you know, your regular, you know, $300 wedding package that you've got, you know, you might have costed it out. I hope to God you've costed it out. and that means that I can afford, you know, on average, you know, you just say it's Sarah's 40Ks. And so your regular product has that in it. And if it costs you more to go somewhere else, then that's an extra cost in the product. Just like if you go to a coffee shop and order a small coffee, and let's say it's $5 and a large coffee is $8 because there's more milk and coffee and water and et cetera. So it's a larger quantity. So there's an increase in your expense and that's perfectly fine to charge for. We'll get to the communication around that in a second. The other reason you're charged for travel is because you just don't want to go there. And which is a perfectly fine reason. There's been times in my life where I've charged less for a local wedding, or there's also been times where I've just charged more across the board to literally dissuade people
That's actually another really good.
It's very successful. If you raise your fee to $2,000, they stop.
Yeah. That's another really good point that I touched on at the end. But yes, if you're working out your travel a little bit like I do, and you go, yeah, I don't want to travel to regional Victoria or to Cairns or wherever because I'd rather spend time with my family, increase the travel fee. Easy.
Yeah. Yeah. And please let everyone know, 100% valid, like a valid thing. Like you as a celebrant, you don't have to travel. That's why people ask, do you travel? Like you're a business person here. You get to decide what product you sell. And you might say, look, I want all of my weddings to be within half an hour's drive. Extremely valid way to create a product and to market a product. 100% valid. So just because you might be different to me. And in fact, I think Sarah and I are kind of at the two extremes. Like you would be very happy to never leave your 40K radius, whereas me, you know, I do like being at home, but I'm also travel's kind of cool. I love it. And I guess I've just kind of moved into this season of life where this is what we do. So travel's very normal and it's so rare for me to do a wedding close to home. So they're the two reasons you'd want to charge for travel. One, because it literally costs you money. Or two, because you want to create these hard boundaries so that people don't get you away from home. Now, there's also the three different parameters we talked about, which is the sales slash inquiry meeting. There's the rehearsal and the wedding. I think the rehearsal and the wedding can be kind of grouped together like you did, Sarah. Because obviously, if you're going to charge for the wedding, you're going to charge for the rehearsal. And even if the rehearsal's the day before, that kind of means, you know, you'll already be there. And so it just might be an increase in the one-night accommodation or whatever it might be.
I just want to talk about that rehearsal thing for a minute because I have actually seen some celebrants say, do you charge for rehearsal? I know that some people have made a legitimate business decision to charge for every rehearsal they do, and that's absolutely fine. If your business decision is that you've costed out your package and it does not include a rehearsal, but they can add on a rehearsal for a price, that's fine. What concerns me, though, is people who say, I'm happy to travel to your wedding for free, like I'm going to include that travel in my package, but if you want me to come to a rehearsal, I'll do the rehearsal for free, but only if you pay me to come to the venue. I don't feel like if you're not charging to go to the venue for the wedding that you can charge to go to the venue for the rehearsal, unless that's your blanket kind of rule that that's how you work always. Because I know some people are like, you can have a rehearsal in my home for free, or I can come to your venue for more. That's fine. But I have seen some people who are a bit like, yeah, I just don't want to go to that venue twice. That's annoying. So how about I just charge to travel to that venue for the rehearsal? Yeah, that feels icky to me. Anyway, moving on.
And that's a really good segue into the heart of all of this is I think that we get really wound up in these conversations from a celebrants, you know, what celebrants do kind of conversation. And I'm glad that we can have these conversations here, but I hope that in the end, each one of you walks away and just makes your own good decision for you, because you're allowed to, because you're a person with your own agency. So don't do things because, this is what normal celebrants do. Like, Sarah and I are not normal, especially Sarah.
Not me.
Sarah's very weird.
True.
I'm rather normal, but Sarah's
so weird.
Sarah's a freak. So don't think that there's some kind of normality that we are preaching here. That this is the normal thing that celebrants do. But you'd walk away and you'd make a good decision for you and your business and your family and et cetera. But let me throw some thoughts out there. I feel that a lot of travel packaging, the way that people communicate it as part of their business product, it's just confusing. I like Sarah that you say, you know, 40K is included outside
negotiation.
Of that by, what's the word used by conversation? Negotiation, yeah. That's great because that puts the power back in your hands. It opens up the conversation and you might already, you might already have a Saturday in Ballarat and they want to do a Sunday, and you're like, I'm already going to be there. So instead of charging X number of kilometers per whatever, you might be like, look, you know what, just another night's accommodation. And you'll make a weekend out of it, and you go see your friend at Ballarat, and you'll have dinner with them. And you have the power in that conversation to say that. But the important thing is, from a business point of view, are the people inquiring with you, are they walking away confused by your travel conversation? Or is it all too hard, or you've got a three-page PDF? If you're in North Brisbane, then it's $308 travel, but if you're in South Brisbane, it's $241, unless it's a Saturday, in which case it's $243, and I'm exaggerating here, but I feel like that's how a lot of the travel conversations happen on websites when people are communicating their fees. They make it really bloody complicated. Even the per-kilometre thing, the reason I've never charged per-kilometre is because it forces... it's different to charge per kilometre when you've got the agency and you get to quote them a fee because you know where you live. But if you say on your website, 75 cents per kilometre, then they need to know where you live, and it might be the first 40Ks are free, but we're 41Ks away. Do we have to pay you 75? Is there literally going to be an invoice for 75 cents? And clearly, I know with you, Sarah, there wouldn't be. You'd be like, 41Ks, you're good, bro. But that's the confusing part of listing that kind of travel conversation, particularly with inquiries. I was actually really encouraged by a local celebrant who I think we were working the same wedding expo, and she said to me, because I think I said, that afternoon I'm going, I was meeting someone halfway to Brisbane for a sales meeting. She goes, I just get them all to meet me at my office. They don't want to come. They don't have to book me. And I'm like, why haven't I thought of this? Why is it taking someone else to tell me? that I get to choose things. I'm like, man, my mind is blown. And so I now do that. I say I live at Shugan. And unless, of course, I'm already going to be traveling to your place. Like, if I'm already going to be in Brisbane for a wedding, then I'll meet you there. But meet me in Shugan, or we'll get on Skype or FaceTime. And the talking on Skype and FaceTime or Zoom or whatever version of thing you want to do, it is a real skill. And I've learned to get what I think is pretty good at that. But I'll also agree with you, Sarah. If I meet someone in person, totally. I'm much more likely for them to book me. And I think that's maybe 20% personal delivery, but 80%, they've put their big boy pants on for the day and they've gone out to meet a celebrant and they've invested time and petrol and you know, all that stuff. And that gives them some buy-in to you. If you're someone worth meeting with, then they've already made kind of half the decision. Like, there's maybe been four or five couples in the last year who I've met with in person who haven't booked me. And that's fine because they met me and they made a decision and that's good. And I'm glad they didn't book me because I would hate for them to book me because we met. Like, I'd like for them to make an intelligent decision. So I haven't talked about what I do because I've got a different business goal than many celebrants. I suppose there's two angles to this. One of my business goals is that this business provides for my family. So we eat and we have our house paid for and et cetera by my celebrancy. And so with that, I make different decisions to some celebrants and some wedding professionals, but also we want to travel. So I've heard of different wedding photographers saying, well, if I've got to travel to Melbourne for your wedding, then I've got to get there the day before. So there's going to be a day race and I'm going to be away from my family for 4 days and blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, a $3,000 invoice becomes a $10,000 invoice. And I'm like, I don't know how many people give a crap about that. I don't know. And if you can charge it, that's great. But that kind of slips into that whole, well, I don't need to travel. So if you want me to travel, it's going to cost you. And some people will pay for that. Me, I love doing weddings in crazy different places around the world. And so I'm slightly more likely to swallow a little bit of the travel cost, unless it's somewhere that I've been before or someone I like. If you try to book me for a Sydney wedding today or a Queensland wedding or a Melbourne wedding or a North Queensland wedding, you're covering every drop. You're covering the flights up and back, parking at the airport, one or two nights accommodation, a rental car,
yep.
And I'll slip $50 in for some fuel and meals because I don't need to go to Sydney again and I don't need to go to Cairns again. And I'm happy to be your celebrant. I would love to be your celebrant. And so what I do is I wrap it up into a single fee. And if I was a little bit more entrepreneurial, I would actually wrap the whole thing into a single fee. I would say my Cairns fee is $2,100, for example. And that's an easy thing for them to swallow. It's a nicer thing to swallow than $1,500 plus $600 travel. But I'm also at a stage of life where I don't really mind too much. So I have a separate set of fees for different cities. So I'll say Sydney, $600. So it'll cost you $600 for me to be your Sydney celebrant. That covers flights, rental car. Sometimes I go, like, that does cover a night's accommodation. Sometimes I don't stay a night. And you know what? They don't have to know or care. It's not for them to worry about. I've just said Sydney is $600 and I'll look after it because they don't need to know how I live my life. They just need me to be their awesome celebrant for a couple of hours on a Saturday afternoon. And that's how I process that. I don't do rehearsals, so I don't charge for them because I don't do them. So and I don't travel for them. One of the few places where I actually do relax that policy is, look, you know what, if you've got me to Puglia in Italy for your wedding, why not? I'll come to the rehearsal the day before.
Only this once.
For you, I'll make an exception, and I'm doing that this year. This once. So that's how I roll with travel. Local travel, I've got a really simple thing. I'm free between Noosa and Byron Bay and Toowoomba. There's no extra travel costs. My local product fee covers that. And the way that I kind of judge that is that if I can drive to your wedding, I'm not gonna charge you extra travel. There's been a few times where I'm also the MC that night, and so I'll book my own accommodation because I decided I wanted to stay the night. And luckily in my fees, I've got enough buffer to just swallow that. That's okay. But that's how I've decided to price myself. That I want, if you're having a wedding between Noosa, Byron Bay, and Toowoomba, which is that's maybe a 300k radius. I'm not going to charge travel. I just want you to book me. If we are a good fit, I don't want travel to be an inhibitor to that, and I'll just be there. But with that, I'm also, I'm guessing, if not the most expensive celebrant in town, one of, and I feel that when you're kind of operating at that level, travel should just be included. And that's my view of how my product for Josh Withers should be shaped. You're welcome to make your own decisions, but that's how I've made mine. And it comes from that philosophy of my travel is either covering costs or it's saying I just don't want to go to Noosa. And you know what? I'm actually not far away from charging a travel fee for Noosa because I just don't need to go to Noosa ever again. Sick of the place. But that's a decision that I'm making on how to run my business. And then to turn this around again, in 2021, 2022, we're hoping to be home a little bit more, particularly 2022, hoping to be home a lot more. And so I'm starting to think, how can I incentivize being home more? And that might be via price, that might be via, you know, other things. But this is the forever changing face of business, is that this isn't set and forget, but you need to know your why. You need to know your heart's kind of desire behind all these decisions so that you can, as you engage with new seasons or new problems or new ideas, you have this underlying philosophy that guides the whole process. Is that good?
And it's really good. I know also that you have, if you've been asked to do a wedding in somewhere that's super cool and amazing and you just want to go there, you will almost swallow the travel fee, yeah?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So a good example of this. A couple, they have a name, and they listened to my podcast and they fell in love with me. And they said, they sent me an email saying, look, we know that you live on the Gold Coast, but would you consider being our celebrant in Florida, in Orlando? And I wrote back and said, hell yeah. And I really wanted to do that. And so I said to them, I said, look, I really want to be your celebrant. We're going to make a month traveling around the States. Why don't you just pay my regular fee? And I'll just get myself there. And that's a decision that I'm making because I want to be there celebrating all in it. They listen to my podcast. And I'm like, how cool. And so many people don't have the opportunity to make that decision, but I just did because I really wanted to. And that's my prerogative. I'm a big boy. I get to make decisions like that.
And it's also your privilege. And a lot of celebrants who are listening are not in a position to be able to go, yeah, I'll just come to Florida for free. And that's okay.
Oh, totally, yeah.
That's okay. We're not saying this is what, you know, that Josh's way is best or my way is best or anything like that. You know, I think both of us accept that we're pretty privileged in being able to pick and choose and you know, sort our lives out, the kind of business that we run around the lives that we want to live. And so, you know, if you're in a different position, certainly don't listen to this and go, oh, Josh didn't charge to go to Florida. Maybe I shouldn't charge to go to Florida. No. That's not what we're saying. Yeah. It's what about whatever works for you. Totally. And it's coming back to that why thing. Why are we doing this? Why do I want to travel? Do I want to travel? Do I not want to travel? Etc. Good chat.
So, Sarah, will you do my wedding for free in Hawaii?
Hawaii. I've been to Hawaii. Pick somewhere else. If you said New York, I'd probably say yes because I love New York.
LA. All right, it's on the line. If any celebrant is getting married in New York, hit Sarah. You just get yourself a freebie, baby.
Love it, love it, love it.
New York's really cool. I've my close friend that I mentioned earlier, who's getting married in New York. We're literally 50-50 on the line about whether we should do their legals in New York or do the legals in Australia, because I have the authority to do both, and obviously they're in a position where they can do both. And we're just throwing back the ideas about, like, well, get married overseas, you got to come home, do your change of name, change your passport, change your driver's license, get married here, it's all free, but then you don't get a New York marriage license, and yeah, it's kind of
so
cool.
So many things to think about. And just a reminder for newbie celebrants who are listening to this who are not aware, you do have to get a separate registration to marry people legally in New York. Anywhere outside Australia, you can't get legally registered to marry people everywhere, but there are some places, certain states in America, various other places around the world where you can get registered to marry people legally. So just a reminder, because otherwise we're going to get a whole lot of adding at us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. cool. I think that that might be a good spot to go. We're done for today.
Well, Sarah, let's wrap up. Can you, we'll just make sure everyone knows where to go to do their OPD this year. What's the website address?
It is lifeskillstraining@vic.edu.au, although I am looking at changing it to lifeskillstraining.com.au because I do own both domains. So lifeskillstraining.com.au will also go to the website. Maybe just go there. It's way easier to remember than the whole vic.edu, blah, blah, blah. lifeskillstraining.com.au.
Awesome. And in case this is the first time anyone's heard your sweet succulent voice, what's your website and social media?
I am sarahaird.com.au. That's A-I-R-D. And Sarah does have an H on the end. Otherwise, it would be Sarah. sarahaird.com.au. On all the socials, I am Sarah Aird, civil celebrant.
My name is Josh Withers. You can find me at marriedbyjosh.com. And I'm at marriedbyjosh on all the socials. This podcast is a product of the Celebrant Institute. The website is celebrant.institute. We do free blog posts, but also a lot of the blog posts require a login. They cost $10 a month because we write some really good stuff on there. And I feel like I need to reiterate this. It's a place where you can ask questions. Almost all the articles there are because someone asked a question. So that way the articles are actually hitting real problems that might be existing in your life. Otherwise, Sarah and I are just forced to sit there and twiddle our fingers and think of things to blog about. And so ask a question, get on there. Celebrant.institute. This is the Celebrant Talk Show. You can send us questions, ideas, thoughts, or apple pies to hello@celebrant.fm. And you can find other episodes to this podcast at the website, celebrant.fm. Sarah, once again, you're a legend. Thanks for hanging out. I'll talk to you soon.
You're a legend too. Yay, talk soon. Bye.